Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and today, at the end of March, on the 26th in 2020, I get to talk with Jessica. It's all good. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Dennis.
Jessica, were you born an optimist? Were you born? I mean, I have very much I'm wired that way. It just happens to be, you know, when I have a default setting, I will come back to that setting. And when I see it's all good, give me some context about both what that's about and how that relates to your default personality.
Okay. Well, first of all, I won't necessarily say I was born the most positive. According to my parents, I was actually a very mean baby. And that didn't change. Yeah. My mom often reminds me, if I have like a cute moment with my father, she'll look at him and say, does that remind you? Can you believe us that there's still that little mean baby? Like, she's so sweet. And I'm like, that was a long time ago. Why do we keep bringing it up? But so I don't think it was all good when I was a baby. And as a child, I got picked on a lot in my earlier days. So, like,
really?
Middle school, elementary school, just trying to survive.
What were you picked on
up.
About? What did you feel different? I felt very different, even though I was a white, upper middle class, privileged child. I was a fat child. Back at a time, I'm 71,
really?
and this was at a time when only one out of like 20 in a class were overweight. You'd have to look back at the pictures to be able to see what that was like. What was you told me in the pre-interview that you were 34, right?
Right.
So where were you in middle school and elementary school, and what were the racial demographics of where you were?
Oh, all right. That's a fun one. So, first of all, I'm black. I don't know who's listening if they know who Jessica's all good, but I'm black for those who didn't know. So that means that I would have been in elementary school in the 90s. Huh?
Thank you. I was going to ask you how you identified, because I preferred how people identify. Do you identify as black, African American, or a woman of color?
I go with black, but I accept the other one for what people are more comfortable with or what they choose depending on the situation. I like black because it's one syllable. African American is seven syllables. And woman of color, that's what, like three words? So black, boom. Got it. Just in one.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. So you're a black child in an elementary and middle school.
Well, funny thing, too, this also kind of affected a lot of people might not know. I actually went to six elementary schools. And fifth grade was in middle school. So that's from kindergarten to fourth grade, six different elementary schools. And it wasn't because we moved around a lot or anything. It was because of a mixture of things. Like my mom's career, she was planning on becoming a teacher, but she didn't finish her bachelor's until I was in middle school. So she would substitute teaching and sometimes like a telemarketer or something. So there were times we got switched to schools because she was teaching in that school, like it was a private school, and she could get like free tuition. So we'd go there. Or if she and my father were working, there were times we were put in a school. There's one school in particular that was near my grandma's house. So we got moved to that school, so the bus would drop us off at grandma's, and then one of my parents could pick us up later. And then there's at least two or three schools I was pulled out of because we were picked on really badly. I have two brothers, so I got picked on more, and my older brother got picked on more. And so my mom, my older brother needed more things educational wise, so sometimes he was moved to a school for that. And there were times we were all in the same school and a few times we weren't in the same school. So being the new girl a lot, that was one thing. I was also considered ugly to many children. So I have a gap in my teeth and I have a unibrow, which I actually was so hated on for that I stopped letting people like see it around 12. And I literally started growing it back out. How old was I, like 33, baby? About 33.
Wow.
So I've only had it for a little more than a year, which shows you how deep those things can go. But and a lot of people are just now finding out that I have a unibrow. Some people can't see it now, and I'm like, well, I wish people could see it back in the 90s. But so that was one thing. And then we were like basic middle class, so we definitely got the, you can't have like the fancy toy. You get the Walmart off-brand version of the toy because we had three kids, save money. So that was a thing. And then the different schools, there were times we went to schools that were multicultural, specifically black, white, and some Mexican. There were times that we went to schools that were all black, and there were times that we went to schools that where it was all white. And in fact, I think it was in third grade where we were the only black children in the school plus one other girl, and my mom was a teacher. And then in middle school, later on when I thought I was going to get to stay in the school I was in fourth grade, we ended up moving to a place closer to where my mom was going to college, and that's where they start middle school in fifth grade. And I remember that day, it was very different from third grade, because that day I remember sitting in my class as the only black girl in my class. And that school, there were a pocket of black kids, but in that particular school, we were so spaced out, you could be the only black person. And that was one of those things that kind of messed me up sometimes when we went to predominantly black schools, because kids did not like the way I talked. Apparently, I wasn't what they called black enough growing up. And so, and even in the schools that were predominantly white in high school and middle school, I would get picked on by white kids with black kids leading the ring on me not being black enough. It was a very frustrating challenge.
Holy
so,
Christmas. Well, how did you build up, Jessica? Talk about resilience, because I'm not only are we as a country right now at the end of March going through a COVID crisis, and we're, you know, exactly. But we're going through this, but we're really trying to rethink who we are and how we are. And your resilience, where does that come from? Where did that being able to bounce back and to be able to work through that? Talk to me about that.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. So there are several factors. First of all, I did grow up in the church. We are very strong in our faith. Mm-hmm. And so being a kid, Jesus was everything. And so being brought back to that place of faith was really helpful in a lot of things. However, of course, a kid going through life dealing with puberty and change and issues, the food I had decided to make a comeback. There we go.
No worries. It can repeat for a while. I had my lunch right before we started too, so continue.
Okay. If you were in church and, like, maybe some church members would tell you you were pretty or your parents told you were pretty,
right,
it didn't help with all the kids telling you you were ugly. And so dealing with those things and why do I get picked on, sometimes that kind of overrode the things that we were really taught. And I did have I still have parents who are supportive and love me. And my brothers were like, you know, that was my important first relationships as a child. So when I went home, it was peaceful. Nobody was picking on me without the occasional somebody fighting over, like, who had the last Cheeto or something.
Sure.
And my parents always being there. But I did get to a point where my mom, she was so overprotective that you could tell someone, like, you could tell on the kid who picked on you, and then she went to go to school and talk to the principal and the teacher on why they aren't doing better about a kid not picking on me. And then the kids are like, your mom came and you told, I can't believe it. It was just worse. So I got to a point where I stopped telling my parents everything. And so it was, okay, I've got to deal with this myself. And I want to say about 15 is when I kind of got grounded in who I was. So freshman year of high school, this is now, high school was the most stable school I had. And this school was connected to the school that I went to in fifth grade and some of sixth grade and came back in eighth grade. That was in a small town, not a lot of black people, but it was kind of where we kind of stayed. And so the kids from the high school remembered me as the black teacher's daughter from the middle school, because my mom taught at that school for a little while. Like I said, we were with her. And so I was kind of safe in some ways, because a lot of these kids knew her as this disciplinary, and they admired her, but they were scared of her. And so now in high school, I'm kind of on my own. My own class is starting to get used to the fact that I'm just that weird girl. And so my friends, we were all like kind of not the cool kids. And some of my girlfriends were like, hey, we should go out for cheerleading, which never crossed my mind. I didn't like sports about that time. And I'm like, cheerleading? Okay. And a lot of people don't even think of me as a cheerleader. Trust me, I didn't either. And so we went out for the team. But, like, all the other kids, the cool kids, found out I was going for cheerleading. And they're like, what? Jessica's going to be a cheerleader? Huh? And they made fun of me for trying out. And I was like, crap, now I got to make it. Because if I don't, I'm going to look like a failure. Then all these friends were like, let's do this. Like, all two or three of them quit the tryouts. And they left me. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
hey,
we were going together. This wasn't my idea.
What are you
and
doing?
So
come back here.
I know. So I had more weighing on my shoulders, so I couldn't quit. And so I tried out. And the thing is, like, I didn't know much about cheerleading. I was actually pretty bad. I was a slow learner when it came to dancing, learning choreography. And on top of that, I couldn't do cartwheels. Even to this day, I don't like being upside down. I don't like stacking people. That's dangerous. I actually prayed in the audition, the tryouts. I'm like, dear God, get me through this cartwheel. Like, that's how scared I was. Somehow my feet went up, they came back down, and I was good, and I made the team. I couldn't believe it. Looking back, I didn't think it was affirmative action because there was only one other black person, and she was used to cheerleading, and I'm thinking, okay, I think they just needed some more chocolate in this pool of milk. So
absolutely,
that is really what happened. So then I made the team,
and then
all the kids who laughed at me, I'm thinking, yeah, proved it to you. And they are like, wait, you made it? And they laugh some more. And that's when it hit me. No matter what I do, these people are not going to like me. And I can't impress them. I learned how to cuss in middle school for kids to stop picking on me, which was really bad for my family. We weren't allowed to listen to non-Christian music, but we got cable in middle school. So I tried to learn the songs on the low and then got to school and I knew the songs and it still didn't work. And now I'm a cheerleader. And nobody, even the cheerleaders didn't like me. So I kind of came to a realization of all the things that I did in my life from I would wear pants a lot because I was embarrassed by my legs or I would I just did all these things to try to accommodate people who were never happy. And
exactly.
What kind of locked it in for me is I used to love to draw my little notebook back in school. And I drew, like, this kind of puzzle thing with all these fun, flowing colors, but the middle piece was missing. And in that, I made this cool star with all these fun words on how I described myself. And I wrote at the bottom of it, no matter how you twist it or turn it, it will never fit in, so it must stand out. And that was kind of my motto for life starting at the age of 15. So no one stopped picking on me. I was picked on up until about senior prom when people finally didn't care anymore. I embraced my weird, unique ways. And the popular kids laughed continuously. And people still didn't necessarily accept me. But I guess at a point they realized Jessica no longer cares. So,
that's inspiring.
Thank you. Thank you. That's how I survived high school.
Well, you know, Jessica, did you have, because you have gotten into comedy and you've gotten into that entire realm, did you have comedy icons that you looked to, listen to, follow? How did that arise in you?
You know, that's really interesting. Comedy never crossed my mind as an actual job. I do remember when my parents got cable, we discovered BET, and as a black girl who wasn't black enough, that was like the best thing. So they had a comic show that used to come on that we watched a lot, and that was funny. There was a Christian comedian we used to watch when we were kids. That was funny, but I didn't think much of it. Although one thing I joke with my husband about is I had a crush on Gary Owen, who was like the only white dude with all these black people, and now I'm married to a white dude, so I don't know if that was planted seed. I'm like the opposite of Gary Owen. I'm the black comedian with a white husband. Yeah. Like, but when in college, my friends, my roommates, had us watching Blue Collar Comedy Tour, and I think that was the comedy tour that kind of affected me because of the time I was where I was in life. And because college was so fun and epic, I often joked about making my life a sitcom, but I was never serious. I would just say that I'm so funny, man, I should make my life a sitcom. Well,
exactly.
In 2011, I'm about 26 or something, I started doing clean, family-friendly improv. Had been doing that a couple of years. And my college, I went to two schools. My two-year college had me come back and give a speech about chasing my dreams. And at the time, I was teaching after-school drama programs, and I was a kid's birthday party entertainer. So I was a clown, a princess, and all these, like, rip-off character, off-brand characters. And, And so telling the stories to these college students about the things I had to do to try to make it as an actor in Atlanta was apparently so funny that the congresswoman who spoke before me said she was really glad that she was before me. And the students and the staff came up saying things like they felt like they were listening to a real-life comedian. And at that moment, I was like, yes. So
how does the universe talk to us except through other people?
Yeah, I really sometimes just need to listen to the others. Even today, I still struggle with thinking I'm not the most attractive. So I remind myself, what does your husband think? And what do other people say? Listen to them.
Thank
right
you.
Now. And I listen to other people's positivity if I get negative. So in that moment, there was no deep inner thought. It was just like, oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, a comedian. Okay, I'll be a comedian. And so on that day, October 2011, I decided I would be a comedian. And from there, started really working and researching. And once I started doing comedy, I would watch Blue Collar Comedy Tour, believe it or not. For like the first year before like every performance, I would like pump myself up by watching Jeff Foxworthy and his friends.
Nice.
And that planted my seeds.
Why did you decide? Now we can all, when I do comedy, I do comedy across the spectrum. So because I talk about how the weirdness of adolescence and the weirdness of all the strangeness that there is in the sexual dynamics and all this that we have all the way up to elderhood, and you know, you chose to stay in a certain part. How do you keep that line? Where is the line, and how do you do that?
Well, as a clean comedian, I think a lot of it comes from where I was at the time that I became a comedian. I was already doing clean improv for family-friendly audiences. We had some of our fans were kids. I was a teacher teaching other little actors to chase their dreams, and you don't have to compromise if you don't want to. So I kind of felt like I've got all these young people looking up to me. I need to prove that I can continue doing this and still create the boundaries of what I want in my life and my career. And so I kind of was a role model before I even became a comedian. And that meant a lot to me. Also, I was still scared of my parents. So, you know, if I throw off the wrong word on stage, my mom will say something in the middle of the show as if I'm not a grown-up. So those things kind of that affected me. Also, going back to my faith, I'm not exactly the perfect person in real life, but I do feel like it's a gift. So when you have a gift, you need to be considerate of how you use that. And so it's the representation that really means a lot to me. And it's weird how you can turn some things off when the cameras are on. And I was like that as I taught children. Like, you might have a whole interesting conversation with some of your adult friends, but you get around the kids and you turn that off. So even if I want to push the envelope in my comedy, I'll do it in a way that is still appropriate for all ages and just make sure the young people don't necessarily understand
Absolutely.
What I'm talking about.
Absolutely. Well, all right. Now, you were born Jessica Williams, right?
Correct. Jessica Denise Williams, which
Denise
is the female version of Dennis.
Exactly, and that's we're cousins, and so in doing that, but you decided to change your middle name, actually your middle and last, and as far as your performance moniker to It's All Good.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Okay, so that story is actually a lot less inspiring than most people realize.
I'm ready to be uninspired. Uninspire me, because the problem is you've already taken me so high. Bring me down a little bit. So de-inspire me a little bit, and we can so that I can get back into this conversation.
Okay, I will. I'm gonna bring you all the way down, Dennis. All right. In my second school, I went to the College of Charleston. Now, I was a goody two shoes at Spartanburg Methodist when I got my associates in arts. And then I transferred to this party school, which I swore I wouldn't go to when I was in high school. So College of Charleston, like, I just knew you went to College of Charleston, you're going to hell. Like, it was party school. They were, like, the highest rate in STDs, and I didn't want the STDs to hop on me. So I didn't mean to go to the College of Charleston, but I went there because my course professor in my first college was an alum, and we ended up singing there, and I couldn't help but remember the fact that we went to the beach, and this cool little town was pretty epic, and I could wear short sleeves, and it was November.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I really understood that part of South Carolina was different from the part I was born in. So the beach is what changed all that. So I went to the College of Charleston, became a party person, made friends with a lot of really cool people, and two of these guys that I was friends with, they were these funny guys. They were like a kind of duo. And they would change, one in particular would change his middle name on Facebook like every day. And this is when Facebook was like nothing but the blue letters, the white wall, and one day, like, these young kids don't even know. Okay. So he would change his name every day. And I thought that was so funny. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do that too. So I was trying to copy him. And I wanted to really like kick it off with a fun middle name for Jessica, whatever Williams. And I didn't have a lot of creative ideas, but I used to say it's all good a lot. And at one of my field trips, I had this sticker that I got out of one of those little sticker machines that said, it's all good. And I thought this would be a wonderful like name to kick off changing my name every day. Let's do it. So I changed it to Jessica, it's all good, but I'm a horrible procrastinator who will think that I'm going to do something, and then I don't get around to doing it for months, weeks, sometimes years, which is what happened. I never changed the name. I never came up with anything better. I kept putting it off. And then eventually, a few years later, someone called my phone and they're like, is this Jessica Solgood Williams? And I'm like, whoa, people know me? Is this? Dang it. I gotta keep it now. Which I still have the sticker. I haven't stuck it on anything. I'll just pin it on the wall. The sticker has followed me through college, my transition to Atlanta, and it's now in my office in the basement in our house.
Oh, how wonderful. All right,
sticker and swagger jacking.
That's terrific. All right, tell me about the business of show in 2020 and where you're going, because I know that you've got to GoFundMe, and I encourage any of our listeners to click on the GoFundMe link at the bottom and support. But there is a business of becoming a working artist who is compensated for her talents and for the bringing what you do. So talk about it from that business perspective and the business of show that you're doing right now and how it looks.
Well, first of all, to transition from the name thing, obviously I have now been known as Jessica. It's originally Jessica Solgood Williams since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
Branding is everything in any kind of business, especially when it comes to entertainment. And so when I decided to come up with a stage name, if you look at my very early YouTube videos, I didn't really think about that at the time because I didn't know how far this would go so quickly. So you would see Jessica Williams, which technically, legally, is not allowed anymore because there is another Jessica Williams, a black woman who is already famous for comedy. So
which I am a big fan of hers.
Do you know how many people think I'm that woman?
Of course.
Do you know how frustrating that is? Someone from college told New York Times he went to school with that girl when he was talking about me. And New York Times reached out to me, and I had to tell them I was the wrong Jessica. But when I
picked
my...
You are the right Jessica. I am the right Jessica. You have reached the right Jessica, and congratulations. Let's go. All right, go ahead.
So, when I chose the name Jessica Solgood, it was more of a Jessica Solgood Williams is kind of what I'm known as. Go with that.
Yep.
But as I started paying more attention to branding, I realized how vital that was. And it was a miracle I chose that, because in the industry, most people just go with like the first initial of their middle name. And that just wasn't going to fly for what I do and what I stand for. I needed something more extreme. And Justice All Good is a lot. And so even now, a lot of people might start to notice that I've been removing the Williams, not only because of the confusion where a lot of people like to take the It's All Good out, but I'm also married now. And actually, my new last name is much better. And people often say, why don't you just be Jessica Jenny? But the thing is, after all these years of branding and then going back and all these years of being known as this, I switch it to Jessica Jenny and no one knows who that is. So keeping
your
branding.
And it's rebranding, and it's elementary school, new elementary school all over again.
Exactly. And I have to wait till I'm like famous and I write a book under my married name. And then, you know, I have a plan to bring out Jessica Jenny. Right now, that's just like my alias when I go somewhere.
Right.
But
excellent.
But the branding was one thing. Also, I kind of got lucky by my fifth performance as a comedian, a declared comedian. I had a packed out audience in Marietta, Georgia, and a lot of friends came out for me and brought friends. So I had already started getting success in just marketing my own stuff through social media and connecting with people who wanted me to do shows. So going from there, you know, the right place, the right time, the right people coming to things would offer you this opportunity. And I'm definitely a yes woman. Like, you say, let's do something and it sounds cool, I don't need to take too much time to figure it out. Unless it's something crazy, like let's hop off a cliff with a bungee cord, then I might say no. But going into this with these opportunities, the doors kind of flew open. Coming out here as an actress was very difficult, but when I switched over to comedian, it changed. I was a model at that time. I was back into doing pageants. I was acting. If I told anybody I was an actor or a model, it's, oh, that's cool. But I noticed as soon as I said comedian, it always threw people off. And then people would follow up with a dumb question like, are you funny? Which I've started answering by saying no. And then I let people know I'm actually very sad. And I work to make people cry because we should cry more in this day and time. And then hopefully they eventually realize, dumb question. But like, oh, no, I'm not funny.
Damn, I
gotta
scratch
that
off my list. All right. Thank you for. All right, that one goes. Okay, continue.
So, but just conversations. That moment that people automatically want to hear what you have to say. The word comedian changed everything. And so to say that, and then say, well, I've already done this, I've already done that. By 2015, I've already been to Hollywood. Those things really kind of caught people by surprise. And then just from hanging out with me for a few minutes, people kind of already figure out you're funny enough to watch would open up doors. So it became kind of a word of mouth. With my social media, there's still a lot of word of mouth grassroots factors in my marketing. I would get people that would come to shows just because they met me and I happened to have a card at that time and they enjoyed their time with me.
Thank you. So, and that's the way, I mean, we know this with authors. We know this with we have to put ourselves into the center of the self-promotion in order for it to work, to get the kind of visibility until we gain the traction in the zeitgeist.
And what you're saying is that you hit the nail on the head. As a comedian, you're not only promoting yourself, what you're putting out there is about yourself. And so it's weird because you don't want to be that person that's always talking about yourself. But in my comedy, the goal is to connect it with people still. So you might hear a whole story about something crazy in my life, but you're going to laugh at the things in your life that matches up with this.
I'm so glad that you said that, because when I do my comedy, and because I've gotten a chance to do some stand-ups and some other materials and some work that I've done, I am much more of a situational, putting myself person comedian than I am an observational comedian like Seinfeld, who can stand outside and comment on how crazy things are outside. I much more look inside myself and go, look how crazy life is from the inside of Dennis, as opposed to observing from the outside. What's your take on that, Jessica?
I think I'm a pretty decent mixture. It seems very situational at first in my comedy until you realize there's like this unique observational factor added to it.
Yes.
Like I might tell a story of something that happened in my own life, but then when you break it down, it's really something that we all can relate to. I will give an example.
Absolutely.
Of my piece called Confidence. And I have this whole thing about when I realized it was okay to do number two in public bathrooms. And
right.
Kind of the story definitely seems like, you know, this is a personal moment in my life. But when I'm done with the show, whenever I actually do that piece, because you can't do it everywhere, someone always comes up and shares their story with me about when they had a number two in their job.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
So it really connects people, and that whole piece is observational, but is told from a situational perspective, if that makes sense.
Oh, I love it. I agree. That has to be – that's my perspective, too. Thank you for clarifying that. How do you – when
no problem.
Do you know that something is how do things occur to you? Like the shower is a place when – I'm a great shower comedian. You know how you have these people who are shower singers? Well, I'll get an idea in the shower, and it's how quickly can I dry myself and get to write it down before it just kind of like vaporizes. It's almost like there's a half life. You know, like you think of the some atom has a half life, you know, before they will decay. Comedy seems to do that for me. From the time I get an idea, I have to really write it down in detail in order for it to stick, or it just kind of evaporates. What's your process?
So in the way that I just fell into comedy, I fall into the best situations to talk about. I don't even know if I think that much in the shower when it comes to comedy. I think I think about other things in life, unless
sure.
When she wasn't sharing it with me.
There you go. And then there are those things. Yes. And
can't talk about those in my head. But it's just life. When I joke about dating for food, I used to joke about that just in real life. And I noticed that people responded to that a certain way, but that was literally how I was talking about things in my single days. So you realize that people laughed when I said this, or if it's something I talk about regularly, people keep laughing. So maybe I should do something with this. So it's more a conversation that I had. I am a very clumsy and awkward person in ways. So the worst things happen to me sometimes, but I just have such a funny, positive outlook on it that I'm later like, you know what? Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
This is good. And, of course, during the birthday party stuff, which kind of started for me, little things like some kid's uncle hitting on me as a clown. I'm a clown, and this guy's trying to talk to me. Those things that happen
What kind of a scary adolescence did this guy have?
Yes.
Ooh,
I had a lot
poor
of questions
man.
For you guys.
Oh, no.
You would not believe how many times that happened, Dennis, during those 8 years.
That's never understood. Well, it's hard to understand. Being an estrogen-driven being, having to deal with the testosterone matches that we are, there is a different thing. I mean, testosterone is a tough drug. I mean, your brothers had to go through. I mean, it's a hard. That's some hardcore drug to deal with.
You know, I'm starting to see that. I'm starting to see that. Like, I didn't understand what it was when I was younger, but now, especially because I was a tomboy, but I look back, I'm like, oh, yeah. But I was in their shoes.
Well, it has been at 71. It's been really good because my testosterone has dropped like I can see over it, like it's a quart low, and I can actually have better compassion. I can have greater compassion and empathy and all these wonderful things that the testosterone was making it difficult for me to connect with. I could still connect with them, but it was harder. But now I'm able to connect with them so much better than I did because I'm not actually trying to run my self-image through how attractive I wish I was.
That is really interesting. I appreciate you for breaking that down. That means there's hope for a lot of these guys when they get older.
Yeah. Yeah, and we can do that. We can do that. There's an initiative here in Austin called the New Compassionate Male, and we're really trying to grow ourselves to be as to connect with our head and heart the way women are, the way women are showing up, and so we can show up and gain that and grow that.
I love that. I'm so proud of you and all them and y'all.
You know, this is what we're doing. They've taken the initiative to Ghana and Uganda, and so men all over the world, we are learning. We're getting to a place where we can actually learn and grow, and that's what I think. That's only going to make your comedy that much stronger. It's going to bring more people to who you are and what you can do to spread this. Now, tell me a little bit about your GoFundMe. When you decided that you wanted to do this TV special, do you want to shoot it in Atlanta? Do you want to shoot it on the West Coast? What do you want to do? Because $25,000 is not a lot of money to do a whole special. And thank God it's better now because equipment prices have come down, but it's still an ambitious piece.
Yes. And yes, I would love, I really want to shoot that in Atlanta. Options to shoot it in other places have sort of come up, but I've kind of knocked those down. I will say there's a small chance there could be maybe like a pre-show in another place, perhaps California, if things go as planned. But the actual special, I want like in the credit shot from or near Atlanta. And that's because I give Atlanta a lot of credit for what I've become as a comedian. I actually have a partner in this situation with a production company that's actually really added to the direction that my career has gone in as a comedian.
Nice.
So this is a team effort between myself and this company. And
absolutely.
The goal is to – thank you. You can't do anything by yourself. I've already started meeting
You're so right.
Yes. In fact, I used to have an entire team in my early days as a comedian, and a lot of them have moved on in their careers and lives. But oh my gosh, I credit a lot of who I am today to this what I call the It's All Good team back in the good old days. Now with this particular production piece, this is you know, me being a positive and clean comedian, my goal is to spread positive laughter. Of course, there's plenty of things we can laugh at. I've seen tons of comedians with probably things I wouldn't want my mom to necessarily watch, but have laughed, had a great time, enjoyed it thoroughly. But I still feel it's my calling to give something really positive to the world. And as you know, as you've seen, We're All Chocolate, it is a comedy piece that focuses on race. But a lot of things that focus on race kind of focus from making fun of, not necessarily the most positive. This is more of that funny perspective coming from the black girl raised in a country town with mostly white folks, married to a white man, but like pro-black and all the crazy things that kind of mix in with that in my life. I realized I had all these hilarious stories surrounding my life as a black woman, but dealing with race on so many different levels and so many different races that I felt like I could come up with a fun comedy special that could maybe help us laugh a little bit more and hate a little bit less.
Yes.
And the title We're All Chocolate actually comes from a real life situation. So the YouTube clip that I share on that GoFundMe tells the beginning of the story of what happened in one of my classes with my students one day, and that and then that name, I actually said, "We're all chocolate," in the end, trying to teach my kids. Well, I told a friend about this back when I was crossing into the DJ world, and this DJ friend said, "That sounds like the name of a TV special." And so be it. Here it is. So another thing, those little things along the way, the little breadcrumbs that lead up to the big reveal, there's
That's
things
right.
that people said that planted seeds. And so
yep.
this particular show, I've had comedy specials before, but this is the one that we want to pay for the high quality recording. We want to
yep.
put it on television. We want to pitch it to industries, and we need the right ticketing, the right audience, the right video equipment and
yep.
team.
The right look.
To
you
together.
Have to have the right look. You have to have the right. Exactly. And those are the things. Wonderful. All right. Well, look, we have just about 4 minutes left. This is as fast, 45 minutes as I could have possibly have wanted. There's more that I want to talk with you about, because I want to talk deeper about race and being how we are healing, how we must heal, what we must do together in this. If you'll have another conversation with me in the future, I would love to be able to talk deeper about that. But here at the end of the episode, what have we not talked about that you want to talk about today?
Well, I actually love talking about race, so I'll just throw a little nugget in there. When I was a kid, although I had my issues as a black girl from not being black enough to being black, I actually was convinced racism was over until I was about 20, which that is a story for another time on how that even happened. And later in life, around 20, and then later in my late 20s to early 30s, I had these, like, wake-up calls on how bad things really were. And those things hit me hard, because I realized some people grow up knowing these things. I honestly did it. I had little pockets of things, but I didn't understand. And the world was really a better place. And I feel like as an adult, I've been working to make this world a better place in the way that I thought it was when I was younger. And one of those I really felt by talking. In my second school especially, race came up a lot. That was the time that I switched my hair from getting straightened and relaxed to starting to wear it naturally. And just that alone put me in a lot of conversations with my white friends about my hair and my race and culture and such. And I was still learning a lot more about
myself. Did you go full on Angela? Angela, did you go full on? I mean, the complete big afro, or did you go what?
That is a tricky situation. I didn't know I had that much hair, because my hair is what I would often describe as a slinky. So when I started crossing into natural, just getting really straight was one thing. But my hair is very tight, and so I have to have someone like wash it and then blow dry it out, which I can't physically do myself. And that's when people realize it's a lot of hair, to the point that people think I'm wearing a wig. And so I didn't know that until after college. Like, I had the first time a guy tried to blow out my hair, it was like this Asian looking sort of half black, half Asian straight guy. And when he told me he was going to put this brush in the dryer in my hair, I'm like, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, come on, sir, you should be a little bit more flamboyant before you can tell me about my hair. Like, I just didn't trust him.
Thank you.
And when this dude got done, I was like, my life was changed. I'm like, you're not even always black. How did you know? What is this? You're straight. You don't know this. I learned a lot about. I was wrong. I was very wrong. And this guy, he was hot too. I remember thinking that he did more than change my hair. Don't worry, babe. I'm over that guy. My husband's sitting here.
All right. Well, tell me your husband's name.
My husband's name is Zach.
Pardon?
Zach.
Zach.
Yes.
Hello, Zach. I'm so glad that you joined us today, and thank you for teasing. You just teased, and I don't mean like hair, but I mean you teased the show for the next show that we're going to have on race and consciousness, and have this old black man and this middle young young black woman, sit down and talk and just really let's take this thing apart and see what we can learn from one another.
Well, I would love to do that. And trust me, even talking about those is still funny. So,
that is great.
But
well,
talking
of course we will.
Will fix the world. Yeah,
thank
yes,
you.
Yes. And
Jessica, it's all good. Thank you so much. We're at the end
yes.
of our episode, and I look forward
Yay.
To seeing you the very next time. Bye, Jessica.
Bye, Dennis. Thank you.